This is Write Your Own Story, Three Keys to Rise and Thrive in Life and Business. I'm your host, Rebecca Fleetwood Hessian. Hi, I'm Rebecca Fleetwood Hessian. I am the CEO of a company called WeThrive.live, my keynote speaker and an executive coach. And you are tuning in to our Future of Work series here on the podcast. I am passionate about the shift that we are in as a society. And I believe it's the greatest shift that we've been in since the shift from the agricultural age to the industrial age model of work, where the work construct has such a significant impact on society. And in 2020, we experienced a global shutdown, global trauma, which led us into years worth of reflection on what success really is and what we want our lives to be. And I believe that we're still in this bit of chaotic shift, trying to decide what the right answer is. And what I'm seeing is a much needed and necessary shift to where our sense of worth and our sense of value doesn't come from our achievements and our work title, but comes from us knowing us. And I believe that is the shift that we have needed for some time, because the way that we were working was leading us straight to an epidemic of burnout. And while this time of chaotic shift is full of uncertainty and many leaders trying to figure out what is the answer, I wholeheartedly believe that the future belongs to those leaders who are willing to be creatives, who are willing to create the future of work. And I want to be a part of that effort. And so this series is dedicated to interviewing people and asking them, what do you think the future of work could and should be? What problems should we solve? What ideas should we consider? And by doing this series, it will lead us into our own sense of reflection as leaders and as employees. And what do we want? How do we want work to feel? And as we make this shift, I believe as we change the work, we can change the world into a society that honors each of our uniqueness and honors the value that we bring into an organization. So if we can change the work, we can change the world. Because, you know, making money just ought to feel better. So I'm glad you're here. Today in our Future of Work series, I'm going to riff a bit on what I am seeing and hearing from my clients about some of the challenges. And then I'm going to attempt today to flip those challenges into opportunities for you so that you can try some things out, do some things differently to get better results. Because the future of work is now. We've made a dramatic shift as a society in the way that we see and do our careers since 2019. So in 2019, when the first report on burnout came out broadly, the actual first report on burnout was 1974, but you can go back to previous episodes and learn about that. But in 2019, the World Health Organization put out this report that said that burnout was a big deal in organizations. And it was a time when people were looking at that report and saying, oh, I thought it was just me. And it's had people really reevaluating their lives and their work. And before organizations had a chance to even really digest what that meant for them. And what I saw in 2019 was already a troubling response. A lot of the leaders just flipped it over to the HR division or somebody in charge of organizational development and said, here, research this, understand it, and fix it, which is part of the problem. Anyway, that would be a whole episode in and of itself. We'll do another day. And so we hadn't even really addressed it when 2020 came on the scene. We've got quarantine. We've got everything that happened in 2020 put us in a time of forced reflection. You can't leave your house. You only have your world within the walls of your home to think about. And it was a time of chaos and trauma. And from a human nervous system perspective, when we're in that state of uncertainty and trauma, it really forced everyone into this place of evaluation and reflection. And people started saying, there's got to be more than this to life. The life I was living before wasn't really cutting it. Now I've had time to really reflect on what I want in my life. It put a lot of things into question about business, about government, about everything that had the infrastructure that we thought was supporting us was called into question. So trust is low. Uncertainty is now more real than it's ever been because we've been through 2020. And now we're easing back into quote unquote normalcy, which isn't really a thing. And so there's a lot of chaos happening around us because the biggest debate is, should we force people to go back into the office, go back to the way it was, or is it remote work? Is it some hybrid of sorts? And as I've said time and time and time again in this series, it's deeper than that. And the fundamental problem before 2019 and 2020 is that the definition of success and the definition and root cause of burnout are the same. Work has been broken for a long, long time, but now we're forced to address some of the issues. So we were told if you proved yourself and worked harder and really neglected your own needs and just took care of the business and took care of everything else, then that by nature would take care of you. That's what we were told success is. Well, lo and behold, the root cause of burnout is prove yourself, work harder, and neglect your own needs. So we have this perfect storm of what I believed to be true is actually what's causing me to feel the way I feel, which is not great about my life and my career. And so now we're at this place of an inflection point of change to say employees, the individual humans that go to work every day, are in a state of reflection about what they really want, what success means to them. And it's forcing leaders to reevaluate how to lead, how to run a company. And many leaders are unwilling to reimagine what needs to happen in order to create a new reality. And those that are unwilling to reimagine something new are trying to force the old ways down through the system, get back to work, get back to where I can see what's going on and I can manage it closely. And that is the opposite of what people are looking for. And so it is a lot of frustration and disappointment and chaos happening throughout work. At the same time, leaders are saying, we've got to get back to a place that we can grow and be profitable. And I agree. As a business consultant, as a business owner, as someone that has loved and worked in business for decades, the ability to profitably grow businesses is what gives society its stability. So, amen, I'm in, let's do it. But we're gonna have to do it differently. So I'm gonna share with you today some of the things that I am experiencing through my clients and through the conversations that I'm having with business leaders and business owners, and a couple of recommendations of ways to see it differently so you can choose different paths forward. Are we ready for this? Okay. Fundamentally, the thing that is the big friction point is our love of control as a society, and especially as leaders, is in direct opposition for what people desire from a human needs nervous system and from a response to the last several years of quarantine and chaos. What we desire is autonomy, and leaders are saying, I need to get things back in control. And so if what we desire as humans is autonomy, what we really need instead of more control is more connection. Connection to individual humans aligned together to a sense of purpose around the work, which sounds all like, well, yeah, I know. Isn't that what we've always been doing? No. I know very few organizations in the 20, almost 30 years of doing business that have been good at it. So we talk a good game. We put out all the buzzwords and do the training classes and kind of faking it. But really, control is what we've always loved. Because if I can control it, measure it, then I know if it's working or not. Well, leaders, I have a question for you today.
I don't disagree. When I'm in control of what's happening, I feel way better about what's happening around my house, in my business. I'm not dismissing that it feels better to be in control. What I'm saying is that's the challenge. And that's what's going to make this shift really hard. So I want us to think about, and I say us because it's me too. When is the last time that you were asked to do something that required you to maybe change your behavior in some way, to do something differently, to get different results, that you weren't a part of the decision making for that change, where you didn't have a part in what needed to be done? Now, sure, sometimes this happens depending on where you are in the org chart. You may have more experience than others with this, but by and large, those that are making decisions for the organization at a C-suite position have lost some understanding of what it means not to be in charge, not to be in control. So think about a time that you were asked to do something, you needed to make a change, that you weren't involved in the decision. Did you think of one? I had a hard time coming up with one. I make decisions about my health, my children, my recreation. I'm a business owner. All of my life today is based on my own choices. And so I had to go back to a time that I worked in a corporate scenario and remind myself of what it feels like to not be the one who made the decision. And because I'm a little spicy sometimes, I was often the one that if I didn't agree with the decision because I needed more context, or I knew how it was going to land with my clients, or I knew the consequences more than leaders, I didn't have a hard time going and saying, I don't think this is a good decision. Now, I didn't always get what I wanted, but I sure did generate change in the organization. I wasn't afraid to push back. Do you know what's happening in work today? People are exhausted. And even when they think there's a better idea, they're so fed up. They're not even willing oftentimes to come to the leaders and say, this isn't a great idea. They just either don't do it, or they do it out of compliance and malicious. Well, I guess we'll have to show them how this one's going to go. And so the aversion to change and the lack of connection is keeping people from bringing good ideas up to the leaders, and it's keeping people from doing the things that they want that need to be done for the organization. And nobody's asking the front lines, what do you think we should do? And involving them in more of the change. Because we're coming out of this chaos and everybody is just clamoring to get back to normal, leaders have doubled down on control. In fact, I think there are some leaders out there that had gone through all this training to learn how to be more empowering and empathic and be a better leader at connecting with others. And then when 2020 hit and people were just in deer in the headlights, what do? Leaders that had a strong bias towards control were like, yes, this is my time. And they made decisions that needed to be made, and people just did it because nobody knew what else to do. But that's not really what people want. People don't want to be told just what to do. And so we've reinforced unintentionally some of that bias for control. And now people are pushing back and saying, I don't want to be controlled. And as people are saying to me, I need to find a new job. I need to get out of here. I need a different kind of life. I'm quick to say, well, I don't know anybody that company that's got it completely figured out. So if you're looking for the Nirvana company that has it all figured out right now, this probably isn't your best move. We have to collectively figure out how to lead profitable growth with more connection versus control. Direction? Yes. Control? Not so much. So somebody does need to make a strategic direction choice, but how to move forward, the collaboration and the connection needs to be immediate. I've seen that leaders, even in the middle of an organization, are so exhausted that they're not even pushing back. They're just saying, okay, if that's what you want to do, that's what we'll do. And so there's this great fatigue in the organization, this lack of trust that needs humanity. We need to understand how our human nervous system works in order to connect with people in a meaningful way so that we can engage them in the changes that need to take place so we can get back to profitable growth. Again, profitable growth makes our society better. It's good for everybody, but how it happens is what matters. And so a couple of ideas that I have for you based on this. People need to know who it's for. So if you're deploying a strategy or a change in direction or something that you need, a goal that you're setting, it's not enough to be clear about how the goal gets measured. So that's important. We're going to go from 1 million to 2 million in this amount of time, from X to Y by when is a good goal statement. But what's missing is, why are we doing this? Who does it benefit? So being able to articulate the story, the human story. How does it serve your clients? Ultimately, you're in business to serve a customer of some sort that pays you to solve a problem or capitalize on an opportunity. That's why you're in business. But oftentimes, we've forgotten that business is about a service, human to human. Think back to the days when we lived in little communities and villages where everybody knew who did what. You know, you had the banker, you had the person that ran the general store, you had somebody that farmed. So, and if you didn't show up to do your work to serve the community, people noticed. We need a reconnection to who you serve. People stories. Why does it matter to our customers that we get better as a company? What do they want from us? So that we can serve them better and then connect it to the goal and the money and the metrics. But we are craving human connection. We are craving a sense of purpose on why the work matters. And it's not difficult to take any role in the organization and make a connection point to why it matters to the customer. But we have to pause and be intentional about doing it and not just corporate buzzword moving meeting to meeting without really pausing to ask ourselves, who's it for and why does this matter? The other thing that this intentionality does is it forces us to ask, does it really matter? Is it really relevant to our customers? Was it an idea that is really more self-serving that's just causing us more angst in the organization? Because the cleaner that we can make our systems and our processes and our goals and our services, the better it's going to be for everybody at this time of burnout and exhaustion. So who's it for and why does it matter? And does every manager and every leader in the organization understand that story and how that they can connect to it? Number two, ideas on how to create more connection instead of doubling down on control. There must be space for people to open up, ask questions, and push back in a constructive way without being criticized for it and without being told that they're not a good fit for the culture, said with my sarcasm font. Because this idea of culture sometimes is taking on a sense of entitlement by a company. Oh, if you want to work around here, then you need to trust us and you need to just go along with what we've said. No, a good culture says, what ideas do you have? Where did we miss something? And then be quiet and listen. Not listen with the intent to just argue and reply back and doubling down on why it has to happen that way, but literally open heart, open mind, open hands. How do you see it from the work that you do? What are you seeing that I'm not seeing because you do the work every day? Having the kind of environment where when somebody comes and pushes back or somebody comes and asks questions, you see that as the opportunity as a leader to learn. Because I promise you, There are so many answers in the front lines of your organization that you have not sought out. Example, I was working on this project. This is back in my Franklin Covey days. And we had spent probably a day and a half in strategy meetings with the leadership trying to solve a problem for this manufacturing company. We took a break, you know, as you do. I'm sure there was cookies in the back and all the typical corporate meeting break structure. And I went outside with the consultant I was working with. I wasn't a lead consultant on this. I was the client partner who had sold the deal. And we went outside to talk for a minute and kind of debrief. And we happened to walk outside at the same time that the manufacturing folks were taking a break. And they were out back smoking, as you do. The leaders have cookies. Guys in the plant have a cigarette. I used to be the guys in the plant smoking the cigarettes on my break. So I'm perfectly comfortable there. So I'm hanging out with the guys out smoking and saying, how's it going? We're chatting. They're like, what are you guys doing in there? Oh, we're working on blah, 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 blah. And talked about the problem that we were trying to solve. And one of the guys said, well, what you really need to do is blah, 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 blah. And it was the answer. And my consultant and I looked at each other and we looked at this guy and I said, have you told anybody that? Nope. And he took a long draw off his cigarette, blew the smoke out. He said, they didn't ask. They didn't ask. If you're not engaging with people doing the actual work in a meaningful way that says, I see you, I respect you, I love you, I trust you, then you're not going to get the answers or the engagement for people to do anything that you want them to do. So you can double down on control all you want. And all you're doing is creating more division as you double down on control. I'm sorry. I love you enough to tell you the truth. And if you have managers and leaders that don't like people very much and want them to just do what they're told so they don't have to deal with them and are just quick to send them to HR or training to be fixed, well, that's going to be a problem. So human behavior and understanding and care and concern and empathy and being able to listen and just keep your mouth shut because you care about what the other person has to say, that's going to be the key to connection versus control. And you know what? It's going to take a little bit because people aren't used to being listened to and they're not going to trust that you really care or that you want to listen. So you're going to need to spend some time building the kind of relationships where they start to trust that when you ask, you're going to listen and that you care. And the first time it doesn't go well and nobody says anything back, you go back and you go back again and you show them that you're listening and that you've applied some of the things that you've learned. And then you go back again and you thank them. Thank them for serving in your company. Thank them for caring about the customer. Thank them for being a human being that shows up to work. The third thing that we need to understand in order to have more connection and not double down on control is that our human nervous system is driven and motivated and inspired to change through positive, affirming emotions, not critical thinking and feedback. We are not machines here to produce. We are beautiful humans here to be valuable, relevant, and make an impact. So flipping the script from feedback to affirmation just has to be done. And just because you don't like it doesn't mean it's not true. Because we have a fascination with feedback that goes way back through our industrial age model of manufacturing mindset that people are machines and so they need quality control and feedback. People don't leave a feedback session inspired to be better. They leave a feedback session feeling a little beat down and wondering if it's worth it. But if somebody walks up to you and says, hey, Joe, I noticed that you really take a lot of time to understand the depth of the customer's problems, and your understanding of those problems is helping us build better solutions. That is affirmation. That says you're valuable, you're relevant, and here's the impact that's happening because of who you are. I'm not talking about affirmation for achievements, that the only time that you hello and high five and good job or send a little gold star or some trinket through the awards program, don't get me started, is when somebody achieves something, you're missing it. It's not just about achievement. It's about you have value because of the human that you are, and I'm glad you're here, and I want your feedback. I want, yes, your feedback on how things are going because I care about you as a human, no matter what your job is in the organization. Affirmation. Affirm who someone is, not just what they've achieved. Because there's two things happening that I have stories for days about this from real people, real clients that I know. One is there's not even a common courtesy to say thank you about things. I have a client that just left a significantly sized organization. She was a leader in the biggest business unit that they had. She'd been there for 14 years. She left to go work for a competitor and would have never thought in a million years that she would have ever considered working for a competitor. Like loyal to this organization and what they do, passionate about it. But you know what it finally got down to? She said, I love my team. The team that we've built are the most amazing people, and I can't believe that I'm leaving them. I almost feel like I'm abandoning them because I care so much for them. She said, but working with my peers is like Hunger Games every day, and I'm exhausted by feeling like I have to protect myself or I'm going to get taken out by one of my peers. And then one of the final straws to that, after months of just being frustrated and trying everything she could to make it feel better, they closed the biggest deal that her division had closed in the history of the company. Now, this company measures things in B's, not M's, billions, not millions, global organization. Biggest deal they'd had in the company history. Just so happened that shortly after, she was at an industry conference where their CEO happened to also be, where, you know, clients and suppliers and everybody at this conference. He didn't even thank her, seek her out just to say, can I buy you a cup of coffee? Just saw this deal come through. Thank you so much. I know you had to work really hard on that. Y'all, if we've gotten to the point that we can't even say thank you when we're talking about connection and the reason that she went to work for this competitor, which again, I'm going to tell you, she felt like she was abandoning and betraying her team because she had that much loyalty, but she felt like she was saving herself. The reason she went to work for the competitor is a gentleman that she had worked with previously at this organization, had gone to this organization, and he called her and he said, I know this is a stretch because I know how loyal you are to that organization, and I get it and I respect it, but I'm doing work over here that I just can't stop thinking about how much fun you and I have always had working together and how respectfully that we can do work and we can challenge ideas and we can have a big vision and we can rally the troops to do it. And he said, I miss working with you. I get emotional saying this because she had so much angst over leaving this company, but ultimately did. And when she left, she had been in line for this promotion, blah, 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 but it was always like, prove yourself, do this, and then we'll consider it and work harder and blah, blah, blah. Well, the minute she put in the resignation, in 24 hours, they had approved the promotion and a significant salary increase. Now, she said, this is an organization that hadn't done anything in 24 hours ever. So lo and behold, look what was possible when they were freaking out that she was taking her talent to the competition. All of it could have been saved with more connection and less control. More humanity, less treated like machines. So if your organization is doubling down on control, you're creating a Hunger Games scenario that people are going to double down on resistance and competition and protecting themselves. And it is ugly. You don't want it. You do not want it. Ugh, I have so many of these examples and stories of people saying it doesn't have to be like this. And it's true. It doesn't. Ugh, I was going to tell another story and I got so emotional and so wrapped up, I can't remember what it was. So maybe it'll come back or maybe I'll tell it on another episode. But these are the kinds of things that simple humanity, understanding, affirming people, thanking people, treating them as the beautiful humans that they are, that they have value because of just their existence, not because they have to prove themselves. Okay. Final thing I want to share with you about connection versus control. Every single person that pulls into your parking lot or logs on to your team's meetings, that works for your organization and gets a paycheck, brings every chapter of their story with them every single day. They don't just bring their skills as a CSM or an RPM or an XYZ, whatever their title role department is. They bring their fears and their frustrations and their childhood trauma and their experience in other industries and their education experience and their hobbies and their desires. They bring a lot, and you use a tiny little fraction of what they bring every day. And just that stifling of understanding of who we are as humans is exhausting. And so if we open up and spend time getting to know someone and who they are in their total humanness and see their heart and see their desires and just have real care and compassion and conversation, it's amazing the effort and the engagement that people will volunteer because you cared. Little things. I have a good friend who's an amazing sales coach. Her name's Emily Shaw. She works for a company called Lucian, part of the Sandler Institute. She's one of the top performers in the country and has the most amazing voice. Like, she could quit that sales thing and take the show on the road. And I invited her to sing at an event that I had recently. And people's jaw just dropped. It said, "Oh my gosh, she can sing." Not just sing, she can sing. Just knowing that about her lights her heart on fire because it's a passion of hers. Just know people. I was in a session the other day, a strategy session that I do where I help companies and leaders understand the connection points in between divisions and departments because that's where we get a lot of leakage. I'll do an episode on that another day. But in that session, I had people go around and talk about their unique gifts and talents. What are the things they're really good at that they love to do? And oftentimes, the things that they're really good at, they love to do, don't always show up in a great way in the role that they're in. And this particular gentleman, he was going through his, you know, list of gifts and talents. And it just so happens that prior to the day starting, he and I were sitting by each other, drinking our coffee and eating our donuts. And I just was chatting with him. And we got into this conversation about, I said I needed to do some more research on tax code. That's an entrepreneur. This is where this conversation started. And he said, "Oh, I'd love to dig in and research really like detailed kind of things." He said, "I love to sit down and just spend hours understanding and researching things." And I said, "Oh my gosh, can I hire you to research the tax code and just teach it to me in a different way?" And we laughed about it. And then we went on with our day. Well, during this exercise, he didn't write down that as a unique gift and talent. But it just so happened in a conversation, I had learned that about him. And I looked at him and I said, "You didn't put that on your list." And he said, "You're right, I didn't." I said, "Why not?" He said, "I guess because I don't really use that in my day-to-day job." And so I looked at the leaders around the table. There was like, I don't know, 8 of us there. I said, "Do any of you have situations where if you had somebody that really loved to dig into the details and research something and give you a synopsis would be valuable to you as an organization?" And a couple of them were like, "Oh my gosh, yes, that is not at all what I like to do. And I've got this project and I keep putting it off because I don't want to do it." And I said, "Well, what if he could invest a couple of hours to do that for you? Would that be valuable, relevant, impactful?" Yeah. So when we know people, when we take the time to really know someone for who they are in their holistic humanness, when we see them as a whole human and not as a customer service rep or a leader of the East District, when we see them, we know them, it's amazing what can happen when they can bring their whole self to work. And sometimes it's knowing that they've got some challenges that wouldn't be that difficult to help them solve. One of my clients knew that a person that worked for them in their department all of a sudden was coming to work every day, just not herself, not her best self at all. Like, things weren't going well, projects were getting messed up, and she was just cranky and not at all herself. And my client, being the good human that she is, she just sat her down one-on-one. She was like, are you okay? She didn't say, excuse me, but you're going to have to really up your performance. I have some feedback for you, which would have exacerbated the problems in this woman's life. She sat down and she said, are you okay? I'm worried about you. And she meant it because she cares about individual humans as much as she cares about the business results. And the woman broke down in tears. And she said, I'm not okay. She said, now that school is back, started again, the schedules of my kids' new school, because they had like upped into a new like junior high or middle school, whatever it's called. And so the time was different that they had to be at school. And so she could no longer be there when they got on the bus. And she had this like 30-minute time frame that was messing up her entire schedule, which was requiring her to get up like 2 hours earlier and try to drive the kids to the neighbor's house to get on the bus with somebody else so she could get to work on time. It was a 30-minute problem that was taking her 2 more hours out of her morning and I don't know how many miles of driving and complete and utter chaos for her kids in the morning because they didn't want to do this. They didn't want to get up earlier. They didn't want to go to this person's house to get on the bus. And my client, being the good human that she is, said, would it be helpful if you came in 30 minutes later and just either worked over your lunch break or just stayed later? And the woman said, oh my gosh, it would change my life, in tears. And she was right. It did change her life. Her engagement went up. Her work product got better. She was happier and more engaged in the office. Now, does anybody else in that office care that she works 30-minute different schedule? No. Most of the time, it has no impact whatsoever on people's flexibility if you trust them to get the work done. And her loyalty and her appreciation to my client for spending the time and just asking, are you okay? And then in a one-hour conversation, helped create a solution that changed her life and the life of her children and probably saved her marriage, if we're honest. The ripple effect of that, significant. See people as people who have lots of experience, lots of passion, lots of hobbies, lots of kids and responsibilities and things, and get to know them and figure out how you can connect instead of doubling down on control. It's not Pollyanna. It's not airy fairy woo. That seems impossible. It's not. Your key to profitable growth and getting the organization back on track doesn't lie in doubling down on control. It lies in your ability to connect human to human, heart, mind, spirit. Really sit down and say, this is a human that I care about. I respect and I love, and how can we work better together? And so I believe that leaders in the future of work, if they don't care about people more than they care about money and results, they don't have much business being a leader. It's probably a role for you, maybe, maybe not, but it's time to flip the script. Human stories and needs first, money second, and it's not going to sacrifice your profitable growth. It's going to accelerate it. Oh, I get really worked up and passionate about this stuff. Okay, that's all for today. I have no idea how long this episode is. I bet it's longer than usual. So thanks for hanging in there. If you want to talk about how I might be able to help your organization do some of these things? I'm good at it and I love it. So call me and let's do it. All right, make it a great day. Love you, mean it. I'm not coming down. I never left it on the ground. I'm not coming down. Thanks for listening to this episode. I would love it if you would go to Apple Podcasts and leave a rating and a review. And then you can go to RebeccaFleetwoodHessian.com and join the Badass Women's Council. And if you really want to take a deeper dive, join the movement of 1,000 thriving women. There's amazing Thrive tools there for you today. Love you, mean it. I'm not coming down. Hey, y'all. Fun fact, if you like the music for the podcast, that is actually my son, Cameron Hessian. And I would love it if you would go to Spotify and iTunes and follow him and download some of his other music. My personal favorite is TV Land.